Welcome to another edition of the War Room here on KLKC this morning. I'm your host, Sean Fry, and the state of athletics in Kansas is now in flux. All junior college sports for the NJCAA, the Jayhawk Conference, including Labatt Community College, have been pushed back to the spring, to the spring semester. We'll start in January. Nothing to be done until January, per the NJCAA's edict, and that is to combat the rising spread of coronavirus cases all around the country. Keisha, high school sports won't start on time. That is due to Governor Laura Kelly's order, pending executive order, that will delay the opening of schools till after Labor Day. And that is because Kansas has some of the most egregious rising of cases in the country. We're averaging anywhere from 300 to 400 new cases per day in the state of Kansas right now. My father, who lives in Hawaii, they're averaging about 20 a day. And Hawaii is a much more densely populated area with a similar population number to the state of Kansas. This is on us, people. This is on us. We're not wearing masks. We're not social distancing. And now we are going to not start school on time. We're not going to start sports on time. And if you ask me my true and honest opinion, we're not going to get fall sports. It's not going to happen. Not at this rate, for sure. We have to bring cases way down, and we only have a month to do it. It's not going to happen. And this is on us. And my honest feeling on it at this point is that I'm angry. I'm angry at all of you. I'm angry at myself. I'm angry at my neighbor. I'm angry at everybody I see that walks around town and thinks they don't need to wear a mask. They don't need to social distance. I'm fine. I don't need to do that. To all the mothers and fathers out there that bring their kids into Walmart and in the stores around this state without wearing a mask, shame on you. To all of us who don't wear a mask in public, shame on you. You did this. You brought this upon yourself. Schools will not open on time. Sports will not start on time. And the real important thing there is schools will not start on time. More parents, more kids are going to be put under more duress because of you, because of all of us. And at this point, I feel anger. I feel tired. I feel fatigue. And I feel... it's hard to describe what I feel right now. This past week was difficult. Especially when you look back that 2 weeks ago, 2 months ago, the executive director of Keisha, Bill Flathook, told me over the phone. He said, right now, we are on the path for fall sports. And now we're not. Now Keisha's going to delay it. And rightfully so. We're not going to have football till maybe October, if at all. And the loss of sports is just an iteration of the loss of schools and education as a whole. We're hurting our children. We're hurting the kids that need us the most right now, that have already had the most stolen from them because of this pandemic. And it pains me to see the people in this state that clearly don't care about kids, do not care enough about kids to put on a damn mask. Today's guest is Rob Barkus, Parsons High School Athletic Director. We've got a lot to talk about. His father, Don Barkus, a legendary football coach in this town, passed away recently. We'll talk about that. He's obviously an athletic director at Parsons. We're going to talk about this news with Keisha and the state of Kansas delaying the opening of schools, delaying the start of athletics. Parsons has a new soccer team they're going to try and implement this year. We're going to see how that looks. There's a lot to go over with Rob Barkus. He's a great guy, too. Always love having him in studio. He's the guest today on the War Room. Please wear the mask. We'll be right back. We're back here on the War Room. I'm your host, Sean Fry, here on KLKC. My guest today is the one and only, highly esteemed, as he likes to say at least, Parsons High School Athletic Director and Assistant football coach and head track and field coach, Rob Barkus. Rob, how are we doing today? And I feel like that is such a loaded question over considering the last few weeks.
You know, it's day to day. It's pretty good today. With my father passing, it's been a tough summer. Last week was the visitation and funeral, so yesterday was about the first day I started kind of getting out of the fog and feeling like, you know, just feeling regular. So, yeah, so there's that. And then today's been a pretty good day. So,
you know, I'm curious. There was something I was thinking about. You know, I went and covered the Shrine Bowl this past weekend in Topeka. And I was driving back, and it was, you know, midnight, 1 o'clock when I'm on the road back. And first off, dodging deers left and right. I felt like I was in a pinball machine the whole way there. But secondly, I was thinking about just my life over the last, basically since March 12th, and even a little before that. And I think about how happy I was when the Chiefs won the Super Bowl.
Yes.
We watched it together. Yeah. We were at Kurt Freeze's house. And I thought to myself, like, man, the world's really going good right now. It's just completely falling apart.
You know, I was...
It's unbelievable. And then I thought to myself, for Rob Barkus, everything I have felt that I felt like has been taken from me has been taken from you too, plus your father.
Yeah, it was, you know, Chiefs won the Super Bowl. The Vikings, I thought, were going to make a deep run in the state playoffs.
Which they did through that season until they got to state.
And then I'm a KU fan, and I thought this was the year KU was going to, you know, be the Final Four. And
they were my national champion.
Man, the Chiefs' victory was about the last high point of the year. The boys winning sub-state was a good night. But, you know, as far as high points in sports go, those were about the last two we've had in 6 months. And, you know, I was talking to Tanner today, and he's like, Dad, it's been like 6 months since I've been in school. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's – when you take that into consideration, that's just a lot of time to be out of school.
And the government – and the governor is asking more now. And to me, I said it at the top of the show before you got in the studio, that's on us. It's on every single one of us. And it borderline makes me angry now. That in fact, there's no borderline about it. I'm angry now. I get angry when I see people in Walmart not wearing the mask. You know, I told someone at the Shrine Bowl, put your mask up. It's like you don't even want fall sports. And they looked at me like I'm crazy and being rude.
Right.
But that's where I'm at now.
Yeah, everything is so politicized right now. You're either one side or the other, mask, no mask. The virus isn't that important. It is important.
California has rising cases. Yes. They're super liberal. Kansas has rising cases. We're super conservative. I don't know where people got this idea that it's political.
Yeah, I don't either, but that just seems the way to be it. That just seems to be the way it is right now.
And, you know, I got a response on Twitter. You could just tell how in the rabbit hole I am right now.
Right.
Do I usually just... I try to be a little more nuanced, but it's here's me yelling at people and here's me on Twitter to hell. It's this pandemic has devolved me a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, this one person on Twitter responds to me and he goes, you know, and he's anti-mask wearing, and he goes, what about when the government starts telling you what food you can and can't eat? The government does tell you what food you can and can't eat. It's called the FDA.
Yes.
There is food banned in America.
Yes, there is.
And I just don't... I don't understand some people's logic, and I don't understand some people's aversion to the mask. I wore it for 4 or 5 hours during the Shrine Bowl for the warm-ups leading up and during the game and in the field afterwards. It was hot as hell.
Yeah.
In Topeka all day. And you know what? By about the third or fourth hour, I was feeling it a little bit. It was a little difficult. And if I needed to take it off, I made sure I stepped away. Took it off for maybe a minute, caught my breath a little bit, got some circulation in there, you know, chugged the water, and then it was back on, and then I was fine. I don't understand the aversion to it.
It's a little frustrating because you're talking about there's people that wear masks for 8 to 12 hours at work.
Yeah, they're
called
doctors.
in an enclosed space or a factory, and really they're just asking you right now to wear a mask when you go in a store or if you're going to be around people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's a lot to ask, but again. I just want to be back in school with kids, and I want a sports season. So
yeah.
I'm willing to do just about whatever it takes. And if they tell me masks are going to cut down on transmission, then I'm going to wear a mask.
Let's. I want to talk a little bit about, obviously, specifically talking about what athletics might look like this year. Obviously, it's going to be delayed at this point. There's no question about that. It's going to be delayed. What is an ideal delayed scenario for you when it comes to fall sports? And, you know, obviously football is going to be the big one, but, you know, volleyball and Parsons, you got volleyball, potentially soccer this year.
Yes.
And girls tennis as well, and cross country. So fall's a busy year for you, but first off, so what's a delayed, what's an ideal scenario for you?
Well,
that
I
you think makes sense.
The thing that makes the most sense to me right now would be for football to just not play their non-district games. They got six district games.
Yeah.
We can just play our six district games.
Mm-hmm.
That way we know when the definite start time
is.
Five
district games.
Five district games. I'm sorry. There's six teams in district. Mm-hmm. You know, five district games, and then from there,
go
on.
And then week nine.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that's, what, 2 months from now? I mean, I don't know when our first district game is right offhand, but,
well,
you know, that's...
You go 3 weeks. You have three non-district games to open the season. And if you talk about August 17 to September 7, September 9, or whatever, that's about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And so let's say we open on that day and you can start practice that day. You're right. That's about the same timeline.
Yeah. So
football.
That would be ideal for football. Now,
but that's
for volleyball,
the most optimistic scenario we're looking at right now.
And for volleyball and cross country and tennis, I would say you would try to keep your full schedule. You'd just move that back 3 days. I think football, once those dates are gone, it's hard to fill those in. And then your volleyball and cross country and tennis seasons maybe just go a little longer.
Yep. And girls tennis too, they don't need as much practice time to run
right
up to their season. In theory, so what? If school starts on September 9th, you can get 2 days of practice and probably start the girls tennis season.
I would think so, yeah. Most of those girls
when
they can get out now, they're playing tennis now. It's not like a football
tennis
and
doesn't
volleyball
need restrictions basically.
No, they're
you
outside.
You could cancel every sport in the state except tennis. And tennis could probably go, honestly. And honestly, that I don't see that outside the realm of possibility. They call off football, they call off volleyball, they call off cross country, they call off soccer because of all too much contact, but we can have tennis season.
I think if they call off fall sports, they'll call them all off. I don't think they'll give us one season. I could be wrong. That's just my thought process.
Mm-hmm.
Keisha usually tries to be fair
to
all students. So.
And, you know, Keisha has had the light shined on them, particularly Bill Fafelke, the executive director, really over his last first year or two as executive director, between the public-private school issue, which I'll take a little responsibility and put a lot of spotlight on it because I published like 3,000 words on
it. You did.
And then, you know, he had state track, you know, go that extra day 1 year, which, by the way, him and I were on the phone about 2 months ago, and I told him, you know, a year ago, state track going a third day was a worst case scenario.
Not anymore.
No,
I would gladly give that third day.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That third day is fine now. But, and you know, we kind of laughed about that. I give Keisha a lot of credit. I think they've made the right decisions with the right timing at, you know, that's best for kids. And they haven't made decisions that are always popular. They faced a lot of backlash for canceling the state tournament. They also faced backlash for even starting it. And
yes,
that's kind of where I sat too back in mid-March was, why did they start it? Now, I also remember those 2 days, that Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday being chaos.
Right, yes.
So while I disagreed that they played that Thursday, whatever. Like, that's... So did half the country.
Oh, yeah.
So,
some states went a couple weeks later with
spring sports. And I mean, you look at what happened in Missouri. Mesa didn't finally cancel their season until like a month later.
Yeah.
And that, to me, that created false hope for those kids. And to me, that's devastating. You got that girl that you want to go out with, and she keeps dangling you along for a couple months, and then she finally rejects you. That's way worse than just getting shot down right off the bat.
Yeah.
And I thought Keisha made the right decision quickly and effectively, and it allowed everybody to kind of deal with it in a better manner.
Yeah, they did. They had to make a tough call, and they made it, and they were accountable for it. They answered all questions. They had many meetings about it, so they did nothing that, they just did what they thought they had to do.
Yeah. looking at the one thing specifically with football. Football, I think, is the sport at most risk. I could also, you know, I talked about a world where we could have everything, where we lose everything except girls' tennis. I also see a world where we keep everything except football. And that's because there's just so much collision, there's so much contact. And one thing that they've talked about is, and I've seen it released, is like Oakley has a new face shield that you can put on and stuff like that. You're the athletic director, and I'm asking you this question in the dark. Have you considered any of that at all, like any sort of face coverings for helmets, investing in that at all for your kids?
We haven't got to that point yet.
Mm-hmm. And part of that is you're wondering if you'll have
a season. We're just wondering if we have a season, and we've tried to be real responsible at our summer weights, so we've been kind of focusing on being safe there, and it's been discouraging seeing the numbers go up when they were going down, and we had a lot of hope that school was going to start on time and everything was going to be on schedule, and now just that uncertainty back in, just frustrating.
So I did a big story about this for the Parson Sun Weekend Edition, and I called Heather Wilson, the LeBec County volleyball coach, about it, and I asked him one of the same questions I asked you. You were quoted in the same story, and one of the first questions I asked her was, with all the rising numbers and now we're back to this uncertainty, does that make you angry? And her initial response to me was, I just got out of a faculty meeting where they told us to stay positive on social media, so let me flip gears a little bit, because hell yeah, I'm angry. And the reason I bring that up is, I'll ask you kind of the same question here on the radio. Does all of this uncertainty being brought back in, the quote that stood out to me from Heather was, I have to tell my kids again that they may lose a season, that we don't know what's going to happen again. What does that make you feel?
It's just heartbreaking having to think about having to tell kids that. Kids that are going to be seniors that have, waited, your whole life is your senior year, no matter how good you are in your first 3 years, you wait on that senior year, and knowing that we might have to tell some kids that year is lost it's just heartbreaking.
Including your son, Tanner.
Yeah, including Tanner, yeah.
I'm very curious what he's thinking and feeling right now. What do you know from what a father would know?
He's got that kid optimism, and that's good to have. Him and my wife share that optimism, where I'm kind of the pessimist sometimes, so it's good. They kind of balance me out, and he's real optimistic, but he realizes that numbers have to go down. I mean, they just have to.
Yep. Speaking about football specifically, like I said, I was at the Shrine Bowl over this weekend. I was very happy with everybody that was wearing masks. But what stood out to me was I interviewed Adam Albertini out of St. Paul afterwards. He was one of the two area kids I had in the Shrine Bowl, along with Erie's Cape Johnston. Erie lineman, got the start, by the way.
Nice.
Very good for him.
Very good.
And Adam had two catches as well. Anyway, I'm talking to Adam afterwards, and obviously Adam's been in the paper a lot because he had 57 touchdowns.
Yeah.
That kid did it all for St. Paul.
Yes, he did.
And I asked him about, what do you think about, what was your experience like, wearing the mask constantly in the week leading up to the Shrine Bowl, all the temperature checks you went through. They got temperature checked 3 times a day in that week. All the health precautions you went through to try and get this game to happen. And he goes, it would be a lie if I said it affected the game, and it would be a lie if I said it affected practice, because it didn't. We all got used to it super quick. It was nothing. We can do this.
Yeah, kids are resilient. Kids will kids will bounce back quickly. So anything that has to be adapted, they're gonna do better than adults with that, because kids are just so resilient.
We got about 5 minutes left, so we're going to go to a quick break and the on-air session. So I wanted to ask you about your father, Don. I remember asking you about you. You were my very first guest on this show.
Yes.
And I asked you about him then, and it was shortly after he had been diagnosed. And he passed away back in June, right?
Yeah.
Passed away back in June.
June 23rd.
One of the biggest fears I have in life is that I know will happen is I will lose my father, and because most every son goes through that. And I guess I'll just ask you a very open-ended question of, what was that process like for you? How did you deal with that? What do you remember about your father? What do you feel about him when you think about him now? There was a lot of community support when he.
Yeah, I too. Right now I'm just still dealing with the sense of loss. You know, me and him worked very closely together. We coached football together and we coached track together. So, you know, every day during the spring, we were together. Last year was tough, but he's, you know, he still came out. You know, I still saw him. It was different not having him at football practice, you know. Just, you know, we were just together a lot. And just like everyone else, you take that time for granted because you, I don't know, that's just human nature. You just, you don't appreciate things when they're there sometimes. And when they're gone, you start appreciating them more.
Mm-hmm. What I will probably always remember about Don Barkus is, you know, it's funny how time and circumstance change history a little bit. And while you guys struggled as a football team last year, you only won two games. One of those games was Don Barkus night,
yeah.
Week one, a 5-overtime win over Iola. One of the most exciting football games I have ever seen in person. I mean, and it is right up there. When I say one of the most exciting ones, the only ones that pop up to my mind that are equal to that I covered and saw in person are a state semifinal game when I was in high school at Stonebridge High School in Virginia. We played Massaponics. Our field was totally mud because it had snowed for like 3 weeks and they had shoveled it off, so all the grass had been taken off. And yeah. It was just a mud bowl. I remember one time we kicked it off and Massaponics tried to field the kick and it hit the ground. And the guy couldn't find the ball in the mud, so we just came and recovered it. And then I go to college, and I remember we beat K-State, beat Texas A&M in 4 overtimes. Colin Klein was the quarterback. And then I think about a St. Paul game a couple years ago, the year they made the state championship. In the state semifinals, they overcame something like a 14-point deficit twice to beat Burlingame in the semifinals. And that was obviously a thriller. And that 5-overtime win over Iola is right up there on that list. And then I think about what you said about your father when I talked to you about him shortly after he passed, which is that he would get upset after losses because he went into every single game truly believing that Parsons was going to win.
Yes, he did. He was an intense person. He was that way, and he always thought our kids were going to win. Mm-hmm. No matter what the odds, he'd always go out there with the belief that our kids could do it.
And that's a lesson I've learned over the last few years from quality coaches that I really trust and believe in and feel like are great coaches, is that if you want that buy-in, which I feel like is so cliche,
right?
If you want that buy-in, you have to trust your kids too. Yes. You have to buy into them just as much as they have to buy into you. And I feel like Don did that.
Yeah, he did that in... He did that in every aspect of life. If you were his friend, he bought into the friendship.
Mm-hmm.
He was a coach, he bought into the players. Just that's how he lived his life. So that's just one thing I'm proud of.
And to me, I feel like that's a legacy that I feel like the state and the country needs to embody right now. We need to buy into everybody and fight for everybody.
Yes, we do. We need to come together, that's for sure.
And that's, you know, as cliche as that sounds, that's what it takes.
Yes.
As you know, that's why I like what Governor Kelly said when she said, you know, your mask protects me and my mask protects you. Because you're right, wearing a mask is not going to keep you from getting it, but it's going to keep you from spreading it. And so that's what masks are for, and it's a and that's a lesson that I feel like can be learned. Rob, we're going to go to a quick break. We're going to keep talking on the online segment here. That'll do it for the on-air portion, so thank you for coming
in. Thank you.
As always. That'll keep listening to me, Rob and I talk about how angry we are with the world and everything like that. Online, the show The War Room can be found on Apple Podcasts, on Podbean, on the KOKC website, and on my social media. Thank you, Rob, again for coming in. We're going to go to a quick break and end the on-air portion. Everybody, please, wear the damn mask. That's all we're asking. We want fall sports. We want school to get back in session. Please wear the mask. That'll do it. Stay safe and God bless. And we're back here with Rob Barkus here on the War Room, athletic director at Parsons High School, assistant football coach, and head track coach. I'm your host, Sean Fry. Rob, we talked off air about a lot of stuff here real quick, but one thing I don't think we've ever really – I've never really truly asked you about it is I've asked you about losing sports as a whole from the athletic director's perspective, but I did a story last week on Craig Hartman, the old track coach at Labatt County High School and a former football coach as well. And what was interesting to me is his last track season was last year, was 2019, because he lost his last track season because of the coronavirus. And I'm curious as to what losing that season for you in particular, what the impact was on your own psyche when you lost. Because I know you love that track season, and because it's something I feel like is separate from everything. You just have to coach track. You don't have to be the AD. You don't have to be an assistant coach. You don't have to worry about a lot of things that you do during basketball when you do radio and manage the game as well. You're just the track coach. And your track team has been fairly successful over the last few years. And this year in particular, you were going to have a pretty damn good year.
Yes, we were.
What do you think? How did losing that season affect you?
Well, let me back up to Mr. Hartman. Him and my dad were really good friends. They were, they coached track together for so many years. And Coach Hartman's one of the guys that you could ask any question about anything. You know, how do you train this runner? How do you train? And he wasn't worrying about keeping trade secrets. He would do whatever he could to help you. And he was just... one of the guys my dad had a lot of respect for, therefore I've had a lot of respect for. So he's going to be one I'm going to miss next track season when we have track. Just seeing him at track meets, he's just a genuine person. As far as last year, I had Anthony Posier coming back from a knee injury from the year before. Mm-hmm. Brett Baldwin coming back.
Obviously Daquan. Hopefully.
Daquan. We were going to miss Tariq. Mm-hmm. We were going to have to make some adjustments on our 4x1. But we had Grayson, we had Harley Marlowe, who's going to Emporia State. I mean, our girls, I thought we were going to have a state medalist 4x4 team.
Yeah.
I mean, that was...
And a couple of individual medalists.
Yeah, a couple of individual medalists as well, yeah. So losing that season was a big blow for... I think we would have had a lot of individual and relay success.
And not just Grayson and Holly Otto. You look at someone like Sanaya Anderson or...
Yeah.
Who's the one girl who basically only does track there, who lost her senior year. What's the name I'm missing?
Holly Marlowe was the one that...
She only did track. She didn't do cross country. Anna something.
Anna Hudson. No, Anna...
Is it Anna Kendrick?
No. I feel bad.
I feel bad, too. Because she made state every year. Mm-hmm. You had Sanaya Anderson, who could probably be a thrower, state qualifier.
Broke the school record last year at regionals.
So. Yeah. I mean, she's, while your boys may have been some state title contenders, you had state medalist contenders on your girls.
Yeah, balanced team. Anna would have been on that 4x4 along with the Baldwin girl that was a freshman. She was going to fill in, and I really think they would have medaled at state.
Mm-hmm. And obviously Grayson qualified, in like three or four events individually
every
last
year.
And she would have only improved upon
that. Oh, yeah, she would have just got better at those. So I had high hopes heading into the year, and they'd came out, and Anna was in the best shape that she's been in to start a season.
Yeah,
since we started, and Posier and Brett Baldwin had started working out 2 months before track. They were in the best shape of their lives. I was trying to already 2 weeks in trying to scale their workouts back because they were just working so hard. And I'm like, we got to peak. Ready when we want you to peak. They were just everybody was excited. There was just a sense of excitement for track this year that's going to be hard to recapture next year.
Yeah. One idea that's been at least discussed on social media, Keisha has come out against it. Now, Keisha doesn't say we won't do it, but Keisha has come out against it and say, let's flip the seasons. Let's play spring sports this fall, and let's move the fall sports to the spring. Keisha's reasoning for being against it is the fall is at more risk. And so if we lose this fall and we had already flipped the seasons, we're going to cost baseball and softball and track and all those sports 2 seasons while football may never lose one. And I actually agree with that reasoning. So this is a plan I don't really fully support, but I will support it if they say, yes, we can get spring sports in. Like if I know we can get to a point where case numbers go down and they say, okay, we can't do the fall, but we're going to do the spring this year, then yeah, let's do it. I'm curious what you think about that specific idea.
I would be for flipping the season if they could guarantee that those spring sports would get to play in the fall.
Yeah.
I don't think it's fair that they lose two seasons consecutively. Mm-hmm. As you said, it'd be
it wouldn't be easy to work, but, you know, when you think of your spring sports, most of them are outside.
Yeah.
So it'd be easier to do in the fall, but again, I don't want to put the spring sports that would have to move to the fall at risk of losing another season if we got 3 weeks into school and we had to shut everything down.
Yeah. And again, that's another example of why I feel like Keisha actually is kind of thinking a lot of things through and doing and making some decisions that may be tough but are probably fair and in the best interest of kids.
Well, the Shrine Bowl going on this weekend gives me a lot of hope, more hope than I had probably the last 2 weeks. When they went ahead and did the week of the Shrine Bowl and they had the game, you know, that gave me a little bit of hope that I probably didn't have before this weekend.
Well, that hope will be either affirmed or totally crushed in 2 weeks when we find out what did that end up being a cluster or not.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll say this. Regardless of what the result of that is, whether a cluster of COVID comes out of that Shrine Bowl or not, everything possible that could have been done was. You know, they had socially distanced seating, which at the game, it was they cut off every other row. So you would have a row of stands, which was being filled by just essentially family members of the player, and then no fans in a row, and then the next row behind them. And then those rows were also staggered, you know, as you went up and down the stands. And then everybody was wearing masks. Masks were required upon entry. I know all the players, coaches, and media, including myself, got temperature checked as we walked in. I don't know if they temperature checked every fan that walked in. But, you know, they did everything possible. And I think to an extent there's almost some aversion of school districts to do those things. And so I'm curious as to where if we get to a point where – and. Part of this is, you know, who controls it. The county commission can say no restrictions. The city commission can say here's some restrictions. And ultimately, at the end of the day, you guys as a school district are going to get to decide. And you could say we're not having fans at Marble Park. We're not having fans at our volleyball games. And we're going to get out of every tournament. But we're going to push through a season. And it's going to be no fans. You can impose your own restrictions as much as possible. How willing are you guys as a school district to do that, to try and get a season and to try and get kids in the building for school?
You know, we've worked and we will continue to work very closely with our health department. Our superintendent talks to them multiple times a day with questions. So we'll lean on them quite a bit. Personally, I would do, you know, just about whatever it took to get a season in.
Yeah.
You know, fortunately for us, Marble Park is a pretty
wide open area
where you could, there's you a lot of space there.
People in there and everybody can
Oh, yeah. And you could. You know, you could actually put bleachers on the other side if you wanted to bring some in to even have some more social distancing. So, you know, I think Marble Park would work very well for that. But, you know, it just depends on the numbers and what the health department says.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, I think volleyball is almost at more risk than football. Because football is at least played outside.
Yeah.
And there is science behind the fact that you're at less risk outside than you are inside. Obviously, there's way more contact in football.
Right.
But...
volleyball's in an enclosed area. That's worrisome to me also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just that little court space. Yeah.
Have you discussed at all as a district the possibility of conducting a season with no fans if you were given that opportunity or that choice?
We have not discussed that yet.
We
start tomorrow.
what's your initial thought on that? What's your opinion on that right now?
You know, fortunately for us with Wayne Gilmore on the radio station, all our games are live streamed, so if that had to be a mitigating factor, I think we would be fine with it because our fans get a chance
to free access.
They would watch the game. I mean, it wouldn't be live fans there, but they wouldn't miss the game. I mean, we might have more viewership that way just because you couldn't go to the game. So I think we would, you know, that's not what we want, but if that's what we had to do, I think, you know, we're fortunate enough to have Wayne that does that for the for the community. So that would be great.
And that's a response that I've seen from a lot of different institutions, too, is you've seen I've seen Max Preps, you know, teaming up with the NFHS, the National Federation of High Schools, and they're providing free equipment to live stream games if you don't have the capability to do so. And I think that's in response to all these possibilities. And that's an example of something positive coming out of this and how life, I think, is going to get there are examples of how life is going to get better.
Yeah,
on the other side of this,
definitely.
And you know, that's just one tiny iteration of it. I'll say this: while fans socially distanced, and I feel like the Shrine Bowl did everything possible, I wouldn't let the amount of people I saw at the Shrine Bowl last year into Marble Park. Really? Now, I don't think that amount of people will ever show up to Marble Park unless you're playing Labette County or in the playoffs.
Right.
But you know, it's a it's just a weird time we're living in right now. And what's so frustrating is we had flattened the curve.
Yes, we were
down. And then you look at decisions that county commissioners made across the state. You look at decisions that individual candidates have made across the state. I don't really understand how we got here. And not to pick on you, you're older than me. Maybe you know society better than I do. Why is there just such an aversion, such a politicization of this issue?
I think some of the reason is that things happened so fast in the spring. You know, it was schools out, we're shutting down. Everything happened so fast. I think if there would have been a way to process into things slowly, it may have been a little different. Mm-hmm. And then after the shutdown, everyone wanted to get back to normal so fast.
Yeah,
they didn't want to do it in steps. They wanted normal back instantly.
They wanted it as a switch, not as a dial.
Yeah, exactly. And they hit the switch, and you've seen the results of that. So, I mean, if it could have been done slowly and...
Which we were doing it slowly until Governor Kelly, you know, essentially abandoned enforcement of her phased opening, which, you know, she did that for political reasons because the legislature was going to take away her authority during emergency declaration powers. And I understand the political process that took place there, and there's blame to go on both sides, but... Man, when we lost that plan and she said counties go ahead and do it, and basically every county in the state just said, all right, no restrictions.
Yeah, everyone wanted, like I said, everyone wanted normal back fast.
And what pisses me off the most is you can almost understand if Labette County did it because our cases were so isolated and so few and far between. I don't understand why Wyandotte and Johnson and Sedgwick counties opened up.
Yeah,
What the hell is that about?
I don't understand how the urban areas were so quick to reopen.
It's just...
Yeah.
It's a shame.
It is.
From an administrative point of view, with schools being delayed, in the most optimistic scenarios, and schools open up that week of Labor Day, that week after Labor Day, what's the impact of losing those few weeks, do you think?
I think it can be where there won't be that big of an impact. I think we can plan and we can be ready for if school has to shut down. Here's what, you know, our first couple days, if we get to have 3 or 4 day weeks, we can get the kids, teachers in the classrooms and tell the kids what's expected and how to do this and how to do that. Because last year it was kind of school shut down, come get a device, get online, teachers, do the best you can. You know, there was just... That's all the time you had. Yeah, that's all the time we had to plan. So, with a plan in place, I think it can be done. Where if you have to go to some remote learning or some distance learning, it won't be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And no one was really prepared for that.
One thing we were talking about off air too is, and hopefully this opens the door for other activities as well, like athletics and stuff. Is if a kid has to quarantine because he was exposed or contracted COVID-19. Hopefully there's a mechanism in place where they can transition almost seamlessly from in-person to remote learning and then back. And that's almost like an iteration of contact tracing, basically. And if that can happen, I think schools can open up.
Yeah.
How feasible that is in terms of setting up the infrastructure for that, that's beyond my expertise.
Yeah, I think that's what a lot of school districts have worked on this summer is their infrastructure for that. We're going to offer devices to... Chromebooks to all our kids this year. That was a plan that was going to be, you know, 2 or 3 years down the road that is now.
Yeah.
And I said earlier about kids being resilient. If you've been around teachers, they're pretty resilient too. There was a lot thrown on their plate quickly, unexpectedly.
Yeah.
You know, we had no idea schools were going to be just shut down. We thought, have this week to plan things out.
Yeah.
You know, we met that week. We had a plan, and then... You get the call that plan is not going to work, so you make another plan, and then you get the call that school's out. You have a week, basically, for your teachers to set up their last 9 weeks of plans where there's going to be online with no in-person contact. And teachers teach because they love kids, mm-hmm. and it's hard to not have that personal interaction with kids when you're used to doing that every day. I mean, it takes a toll on teachers. It takes a toll on administrators. Mm-hmm. It's just different. I agree when they say we need to be in school, but we need to be in school where we're safe.
Yes. Yeah. And
I don't think anyone disagrees with the notion that we need to go to school. I mean, nobody, kids need
if
school.
If you disagree with that, you're way out of left.
You know, we need to be in school.
Yes.
And you ask any teacher that. Safe. You ask any teacher, they don't want to teach. You know, they don't want to teach via Zoom or Google Meeting. They want to be in person with their kids. And and that's what we got to get to somehow.
I remember when the governor had a press conference, I texted one of my friends who's a teacher in this area, not at Parsons. And I asked her, what are you thinking? And she goes, no comment. And I texted her back and I go, I'm not asking as a reporter. I'm just kind of asking as a friend. And she goes, it's just depressing and I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah. And
that's the impact I think we're seeing on all that impact on a teacher is, I think, pretty standard.
Yeah.
Pretty baseline.
And then, you know, going into it, we thought, okay, school might be closed 2 weeks. School might be closed 3 weeks. We've always had the hope that we were going to get to finish the school year, and then that just never happened. And and as you said, that takes a toll on you when you're used to interacting with kids every day.
Mm-hmm. You know, we have – it's so – you know, I look back over the last – you brought up something that makes me think is, you know, you had a plan 2-3 years down the road to give every kid a device, every kid a Chromebook. Well, you accelerated that. And that's a positive progression of your school district that will have lasting impacts beyond the pandemic of making sure every kid has a device. And, you know, I think about other ways that this is changing. You know, I've said over the last, you know, damn near hour at this point, 40 minutes really, that, you know, I'm angry about a lot of things that are now under threat to keep being taken. But at the same time, I feel like, you know, I juggle that with the fact that I've made other changes in my life that are positive changes. You know, when all the restaurants got shut down, I sat there and I go, I'm going to starve.
Yeah.
Because I would eat out so often because I was just lazy. And so I learned to cook more. I went out and got a grill, I became way more self-sufficient. And now it's nice when I see another $400 or $500 on my bank account at the end of every pay period that I never had before. And, you know, I've focused on my writing. I feel like I became a more complete journalist when I spent 2-3 months working on the news desk, you know, covering education and covering, you know, local businesses, you know, that I feel like that made me a more complete professional journalist. You know, I'm a more self-sufficient individual now. Some of my relationships with people have gotten stronger because we've had to rely on each other more just for the limited interaction that we have, I think. And so, you know, I struggle with balancing the fact that a lot has been taken from me and from society personally through this pandemic. And that loss is very debilitating in a lot of ways. But at the same time, the growth and the progression I felt in my own life through this pandemic, were probably necessary changes. Forget the fact that the $1,200 of Trump bucks I got were got me out of some debt.
Right.
And sometimes I feel like I struggle with, how do I say I benefited from a pandemic? How do you say this is a good thing? But at the same time, where do you try and take progress from all of this?
Sometimes it's tough. As you said, I'm sure for me, it gave me a chance to, you know, really reconnect with my family, that you don't realize how much you're away from them when you're going to athletic events every night and you're getting home and everyone's in bed, or, you know, you get to spend more time with them. And
other than that, you probably had to learn how to basically exist with them 24/7 without fighting.
A lot different. Really, yes, exactly. Yeah. It's a lot different when you're not home as much. As I said earlier, you appreciate things when they're taken away. So I think some people have, like you said, you've some self-reflection, some self-sufficiency there that you probably wouldn't have got because you'd have been covering sporting events, eating out on the road on the way home, because that's just what you do, because you don't get home in time to cook anything.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think positives will be
in the education field, things are going to be different. And I think just the ability to transition from in-person learning to the online learning, if you have to, mm-hmm. or having an option of if a kid has some reasons they can't come to school where the online learning is meaningful, I think that'll be a good thing.
Yeah. What's the looking at 503 specifically, I know you probably don't have numbers in front of you right on top of your head, about how many kids or what percentage is the issue of kids not having access to the internet at home, not having broadband access? Is that a big issue you feel like 503 faces?
Yeah, that was a big issue we faced at the start, but we've worked with Parcom, and I think we have a couple, we're going to have some more hotspots around town where people mm-hmm. can get online.
Gotcha.
So we're working on that.
If you had to guess how many kids just at the high school did not have internet access out of, what, the 300 or 400 kids that go there,
I'd probably say 25% probably didn't have
internet. One out of four internet at home.
I would think. That could be a little high, but mm-hmm. I think we gave out close to 100 devices.
And that's...
Which doesn't mean that... I guess that doesn't mean they don't have internet access.
But it means they don't have a dedicated device they can have to themselves to conduct internet.
Yeah, and a couple kids, a couple students... You know, they had phones and they thought that would work, but no. You can't do schoolwork on a phone, so they had to get devices. So
I can't. I have the best phone, one of the best phones possible, a Galaxy Note, and it has a built-in stylus. I have one of the best phones possible for journalists. Mm-hmm. There's no way I could do really any sort of substantial work on it outside of social media.
Yeah.
You know, I can do some base photo editing and some tweeting, and that's about it when it comes to functions of my job. I need a laptop.
Yeah, we made that initial phone call, and a lot of kids had, they can do it on their phone, and about a weekend, you know, a lot of calls back.
We can't
be done on our phone. So, it was just the infrastructure of the internet here in town, mm-hmm. and just kids having access to a device and then access to the internet.
Mm-hmm. How have you, and it's not, when you say every kid has a device, is it one per kid or one per family?
One per kid. One
so,
per student.
So if the Johnson family, I'm not referring to Daquan Johnson, but just if the Jones or Johnson family has three kids that attend 503, you know, two at Guthridge and one at Parsons High School, they'll have three devices.
I'm only speaking for the high school.
The high school, okay. So they have two kids in high school. They'll
both have a device. They'll both have a device.
That's big then.
Yeah, that's very
because
big.
Because that means both those kids can do their schoolwork simultaneously.
Yeah, our technology department and mm-hmm. our district office have had zero time off this summer. They've literally worked the entire summer. So hats off to them.
Is that 3D printer still going with masks right now?
I believe so.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I did that story months ago.
And I think, you know, if something comes up and we need plexiglass, you know, shields or anything like that, I think we'll be able to produce those in our own school. So
that's just fantastic.
That'll be awesome. Yeah. Mr. Ray does a great job.
I will say this. I've been very impressed with school districts as a whole and their response to this. I have not been impressed with county commission's responses to this. I, in most part, have not been impressed with city commission's response to this, with the exception of Parsons. I think they've done a fairly good – the city commission here in Parsons has done a good job. Schools, by and large, have done the right things. And it's funny to me, you look at all those areas, and one of those areas, county commissioners, they're very government-oriented. City commissions are very business-oriented, so they're super focused on money. School districts, they're just focused on the kids.
Right.
And look at who's doing the right things the right way.
Yeah.
And that's where the example comes in to be set. Going back to athletics a little bit, how if athletics get pushed back to the point that winter gets pushed back, what do you think winter sports might look like? And do you think winter sports could be moved to a January second semester start do winter sports have the mobility to be moved to January without much restriction?
Yeah, you're looking at probably extending a basketball season
by a couple
2.5 weeks. Yeah, because you usually have 5 to 7 games before Christmas, which mm-hmm. you could easily move to after Christmas.
I've done the math on this before. I did it well before the pandemic, but I remember thinking, like, man, the basketball season is so long. What if they started it early January and then whatever year I was in, I think it was like I did this around 2015. I just did it on my own. I picked the date that the state championship was on or the state tournament started, and I said, are there 20 Tuesdays and Fridays in this span? Hell yeah, there are.
Yeah, there are. Yeah.
I mean, so, and you'd throw in a midseason tournament in there where you may play three times a week. Some of those schools play four times a week if they get a regular season game and a midseason tournament in there, which four games in a week is a lot. I don't encourage that.
No.
But, I mean, if you get one or two weeks where you have three, there are 20 Tuesdays and Fridays in there. Obviously, that leaves very little room for snow days or makeup. And so, I mean, if you have, but there's some in there. I mean, you can fit a full basketball season from January to end of March.
And if you ask any basketball coach in the state if you want to lose five games or start January 2nd, I guarantee you, every coach would say, I want to play 20 games. I don't want to lose five games because we can't move the season back.
Correct. Yeah. And that's kind of the beauty of a lot of winter. A, there's not as many winter sports either. You basically just have basketball, wrestling and swim and dive on the girls' side, I believe.
Yep.
No, boys'
boy
side.
Boys' side.
Boys' side.
Yeah.
And so there's few, and I think those sports are much more mobile. And I think winter sports coaches are going to have to start really looking at themselves and say, we may have to make some sacrifices for our fall brethren.
Yeah, they might have to.
And
I don't think they'd bat an eye at that. No, I don't think so either.
Mm-mm. And what the only thing I don't think Keisha can do is let's push fall sports to the spring and keep spring sports in the spring. They can't do them simultaneously.
No, I don't think
they're. That wouldn't be sustainable at Parsons. You'd have people choosing between football and baseball or volleyball and softball.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden and that would kill both of those programs.
Exactly.
You're already spread pretty thin as is.
Yeah.
Which leads me to one thing I wanted to talk about is the new soccer program at Parsons. And I'm just going to let you just tell the community, you know, we've had a couple stories on it already. What is soccer going to look like at Parsons High School? Give me the who, what, when, where, and why.
We're not going to have a full season. We couldn't get a full season. When we voted to have soccer, the SEK schools had already had their schedule set. So next year we'll have a full schedule. I mean, 2021. The fall for 2021, we'll have a regular soccer schedule.
Okay.
Right now, we have a couple teams from over in Joplin we're going to play. We're going to go up to an early tournament in Kansas City, which may be a little rough for a first-year program, but you know, your options are very limited when you're trying to fill games. Even had Hayes High School want to call and maybe play, but we decided not to, and we started looking at logistics and the drive out. And the drive, you know, the next year
that's a lot. Yeah,
yeah, that's a lot. So I think as far as we're going, I think we're going to Baldwin. I think that's as far as we go, except with the exception of the Kansas City tournament. So we got a game with Columbus, a couple with Riverton.
About how many games in total is your season going to look like?
I think 12.
Okay, and you guys are not a championship team, if that makes sense. Which you're not going to have a postseason. Do you qualify? I don't know what.
I don't know that.
Okay.
I should know that, but I haven't.
Okay. Because I'm pretty sure soccer has regionals, right?
Right.
They're in the regional format. Are you guys going to qualify? Would you guys qualify for regionals?
I don't.
You're the athletic director.
I know. I just hadn't looked that far ahead yet. You know, I thought I'd have
2 weeks.
I thought I'd have all spring to get that lined out, and I did have all spring in a way, but I just was not focused on soccer.
And so your program is labeled co-ed, but you're competing in boys soccer, right?
Right.
You know, what's the breakdown going to be there? What are you anticipating in terms of numbers for the soccer program?
If off season is any indication, between 35 and 40.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what's the split there between boys and girls?
Probably 10 to 12 girls.
Okay. So about two-thirds boys, one-third girls.
Maybe a little less girls. I'm not for sure how many have been showing up there.
Gotcha. And is the goal eventually to have a separate girls team?
If it grows enough? If it grows enough, well, we'd be happy to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's competing with softball and track, so
yeah,
just depends on the number of
now, girls if we you have out. Now, if you have what essentially is a co-ed team playing in a boys' division, that may limit the opportunities girls have to get on the field, particularly in a few years when you're trying to field a competitive team and win games. How do you kind of anticipate on balancing that? And I understand this is a pretty niche issue that really is not important right now, but
Hopefully that'll balance out. We can have a JV schedule, and maybe those girls can get on the field on the JV side.
Gotcha. Is that kind of the long-term plan?
I think so, right now.
Caleb Reed's a soccer coach, right?
Yes.
So who's your new cross-country coach?
Sally Clay. She was an assistant last year.
Gotcha.
For Caleb.
First new cross-country coach at Parsons since I've been here.
Yeah.
Caleb was one of the most tenured coaches in the building for a sport at this point.
He wanted to coach soccer, and luckily enough for us, we had enough for cross-country last year, and Sally got us some experience with Caleb, and
yeah.
She's a runner herself, so.
Good deal.
Fits right in.
Other fall sports, you know, a continuing issue we deal with at Parsons, and I'm curious if the pandemic has had any sort of effect, is, you know, the state of girls' athletics as a whole. Obviously, volleyball struggled mightily. Girls' basketball struggled mightily. It's unfair to prognosticate a future, but I think we know softball was not going to have a successful win-loss season this past spring. As you've gone through this offseason, one thing I feel like this pandemic has the opportunity to do is hit the reset button for a lot of people. And everybody, it's kind of like, you know, the yellow flag, the caution flag in a NASCAR race. Well, everybody's kind of back at that starting line now. What has been the focus with girls, particularly in the weight room this summer, as you have a new weight instructor with Jeff Scheibe, who's also your new football coach? What has been the points of emphasis this offseason, and obviously a very limited offseason, to try and continue to rebuild that side of the athletics program?
I think Coach Hopper and Coach Scheibe for basketball and volleyball have really pushed attendance. I think attendance has been really good.
Pat Scheibe on the girls'
basketball side. And, you know, they've had, before the rise in cases, they were having sports-specific workouts, and they were very well attended. I went to a couple basketball and a couple volleyball, so there were good attendance in both of those. Mm-hmm. Hard work going on. I think both coaches are very optimistic heading into this season that they're going to see definite growth.
Mm-hmm. You know, and there were times where the girls' basketball program last year, I feel like there were games they could have won last year.
Yeah.
I mean, multiple times.
Yeah.
I mean, against multiple opponents. And, I mean, there's obviously opportunity there. But at the same time, I mean, you know, and here's the other thing, too. The league is not great on the girls' side right now. I think there's opportunity there. I think you look at some of the upper echelon teams, you know, Chanute has a fairly good athletic program on the girls' side. So does Wellbeck County. Lamar County's always. until Snyder's in the grave, that's going to be true. But, you know, and I think part of a point of emphasis for you has been to find a coaching staff that can be there long term. Do you feel like you're going to have that with Scheibe, Hopper, and Reed is still your softball coach, right?
Right.
Yeah. Do you feel like you're going to have that?
Yeah. As far as, you know, as long as the girls' program in soccer doesn't grow, Coach Reed will be the softball coach. I think if he grows that program, he'll want to coach girls' soccer, and then we will be looking for a softball coach. But I think we have coaches that want to be here, and they want to be here long term in basketball and volleyball
for sure,
and football now.
Yeah, and that's the next thing I want to talk about is the hire of Jeff Scheibe, the new Parsons football coach. I think you and I talked off air a little bit. I've been impressed with how he's managed and run the weight room this off season. He's taken very seriously all the sanitation procedures. He organized that. The event with the surprise homecoming with Joey Goldsmith and his dad, which was awesome, by the way.
Yeah, it was. I saw the video.
Wasn't that just – where were you?
I didn't know that was going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were at home. And, you know, we had – you know, he handled the acclimation process very well when wait started. When the mask mandate came out, even though Labette County said – and by Labette County, I mean the county commission, not 506. When the county commission here in Labette said, you don't have to wear a mask – before the city came down and said, yes, you do, you know, Jeff Scheibe was very adamant and said, we're going to wear masks in here. And as a result of that, we're going to redo our acclimation process. It's that first week all over again. So he wanted to get kids used to masks. I think he has taken, you know, both attendance and dedication in the weight room to both performance and health guidelines very seriously. And,
yeah.
and very creatively in a lot of ways, too. And I've been very impressed with him. I'm curious as to what your takeaways are.
I think he's done a great job of, you know, running the weight program. Called him last Thursday and said, you know, Friday, stay outside. Don't even go in the weight room. So, you know, in less than 24 hours, he had to come up with a program where they didn't go in the weight room at all.
Why'd you make that call?
Just the rising rising numbers.
So is that a focus at Parsons now? Is you're going to try and keep every workout outside?
We're going to try. If we do go in the weight room, I think we'll be limited in our numbers. We're just going to try to...
Like a dozen, I'm guessing, or something like that.
Yeah, we'll just try to have more groups, and he'll just... He'll adjust, and he'll do a good job doing it. I've been very impressed with the dedication he's shown so far this off season. Very organized. Me and him talk daily.
Yeah.
About weights and about football in general. So, very tuned into what's going on. His wife's in the health field, so he's kind of got a good channel to kind of know what's going on in the community also. So I think that helps him there. It's always good to have a good wife by your side, so I think he's got that. So he's just very tuned in, very focused right now, and it's good to see.
Looking ahead at the year in general, I know we've talked a lot about because we just don't know what the year's going to look like. But in terms of an administrative side, do you feel like your administration, both from Swanson and you to the superintendents and the middle school principals and everything, do you feel like you guys are prepared, ready, and willing to implement any sort of health guidelines? And what are some ideas you guys have been bouncing around over the last few days?
I'm going to tell you again, we start tomorrow. but as I told you also earlier, our superintendent talks to the health department multiple times a day. We're going to work very closely with them just to go with the healthiest practices we can come up with, be it how change our transition periods at school, change our lunch periods. That's all on the table. We'll start tomorrow, or that'll be today when this airs. But that's all going to be discussed, and now we have plenty of time to plan for that.
How do you feel like you, in a hypothetical scenario where a parent or kid comes up to you and says, "I just don't agree with wearing a mask. I'm not going to wear one." How do you deal with that?
I'm sure we'll have a discussion on that. I'm sure if we go to school, it's going to be mandated that there's a mask mandate. I'm not going to guarantee that, but I think it's pretty
certainly
high,
looking like it.
It's pretty high probability. Yeah. And we'll just deal with it. If you've been around our staff and saw how they just handled the spring, just so impressed with how our teachers handled everything. I think when we have time to plan for some things that might happen, we're going to be well prepared. And we're going to be safe.
Going back to your football coach a little bit, I know I'm just shifting topics at this
That's
point.
That's okay.
But, Shibe's the fourth or fifth head coach in the last 6 or 7 years, something like that. You had Pitts in 2013. 2014 and 15, you had Swati. 16 and 17, you had Hurley. 18 and 19, you had Freeze. And now you have Shibe. A lot of turnover in that position. I think this turnover looks a little bit different because when you brought in Swati and then Hurley and then Freeze, there were complete overhauls of the staff, complete overhauls of the system. Shibe served as Freeze's, offense coordinator, essentially head assistant.
Yeah.
And, just moved up in that role. And... I think he's keeping a lot of the same principles that Freeze brought in. And Freeze left for probably the most legitimate reason of them all, which is he's a principal of a school in the middle of a pandemic. He was spread too thin at this point.
Yeah.
He had always said, "I'm going to, Guthridge is my first priority." Well, that priority required more of him in a pandemic, so he had to give up football, I think.
Yeah. He was, a couple of days after he did it, and it comes out that we get to have, summer weights and everything. He's like, "Well, maybe I could have done that," but then 2 weeks later, he's back in the same situation where he would have been anxious, stressed, more
Which
worried
he's
about
an
school.
Anxious, stressed individual.
Exactly.
Naturally.
And it's just his focus would have had to been on two things, and he's much better when he focuses on the one thing.
As is everybody else, by
the
way.
Yeah, oh, yeah. That's not a knock on him at all.
Yeah. When you were going through the hiring process of bringing in whoever you were going to hire as a new head coach, I think a lot of people assume that Shibe was probably the leading candidate going in, given the timing of Freeze's decision. Bill Snyder was not going to come knocking on the door. And so, how crucial, in your view, was finding a head coach who, barring unforeseen circumstances, and a pandemic is an unforeseen circumstance, that will be here for at least, you know, give me 5 years.
Yeah, well,
give me a full class.
With Coach Scheibe's situation, you know, he was in the business sector and he gave up a very well-paying job to go in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the classroom, he went back and got his master's in physical education so he could be, you know, a weights and physical education coach. So question is dedication. I'm not a question at all. And he's a Parsons kid, so I think he's going to be here and through thick and thin for the next 10, 15, 20 years.
His wife is a product of Doug Tuck.
Yes.
And over there at St. Paul. And I'll tell you what, man, that those people that come out of Doug Tuck's program, he's a hell of a coach over there, and I've never understood anybody who has any sort of backlash to him.
Yeah, he's another
I'll take a Tuck
and another quality individual coach we have in this area.
I'll take a combined couple that is a Doug Tuck and Don Barkus product on the field in my life every day.
Yes.
Those are going to be good, fine young people and young men and women, and now full men and women that are going to impact their communities in special ways.
I joke about it with my wife because Jeff's wife comes to like the little 7-on-7 things that if I'd ask my wife to come to now, she'd just kind of chuckle like, no, that's not a big deal. You know, they're just, it's so new to them and they're, you know, yeah, they're just so excited that she's hauling two toddlers to watch 7-on-7 where, you know, you don't even know what's going on, but
sports reporter doesn't, you know, go to 7-on-7.
Yeah, but the excitement's there for her and him. So it's just a great situation right now.
He walked into the weight room the night before weight started and his wife had gone in there and cleaned the whole thing.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I need myself a woman like that. holy cow. That's
he'll tell you he's very fortunate.
Absolutely. Got a good staff there too. He got Hauk on the staff. You know, I like keeping who's the guy that played it for Hayes?
I'm just Dumas.
Yeah, Drew Moss. I know his name, by the way. I just blanked out there for a second. I like the, you know, he's got a good staff on him, too.
Yeah.
He kind of kept the heart of the old staff, bringing in some new guys as well. You know, Hauk's always going to – I think Hauk will be a big influence
there. I think so. He's
– obviously, you're on the staff, too. You're a good coach.
You've covered him extensively in basketball. He's pretty intense, so that'll be the intensity sometimes that we may lack in practice. That I mean, he's going to make sure that – we're dialed in at all times. When he had good teams the last couple of years, but if you'd go to his practices, they were intense. They do the little things. So that's what I think we'll see this year from him.
And the one, he's only been an assistant football coach one other year since I've been here, and that was the year Swati won 3 games at Parsons. And you guys were pretty competitive that year. Yes. I want to say it was only once or twice you just got blown out, and one of those was Pittsburgh. You know, that was a very unique year, and I remember thinking this is the most progress I've seen in the year outside of obviously the 8-3 that you guys had. And you know, Hauk was on that staff.
Yeah.
And you know, that's a good injection. I've always wondered why he didn't just do that full time, and I think a lot of it is to do with, you know, he just wanted to be around his family and stuff like that.
Basketball, as you said when you were talking earlier, basketball's a long season when you start in November and you go to March, so I think he just wanted time. His daughter got a little older, and he wanted to make sure to see her events. So,
And obviously, he deals with a lot too. He's got a son with diabetes. He's got an older daughter now who tore her ACL again, has to deal with that. Had a wife who had cancer a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wonder how does it.
I just plugging along.
My favorite Hauk. One of my favorite Hauk stories, and you just happened to be sitting next to me. We were at Golden Corral coming back from that K-State camp. K-State team summer camp for basketball. And so we're at Golden Corral in Topeka, and this guy, Hauk, puts like his 2 or 3 plates of food down, and then he reaches in his pocket and unloads like 8 things of butter honey spread or whatever. And then he goes, I'm going to go get some more things real quick. I'll be right back. And we're just sitting here going like, where does he put it all? He's way thinner than both of us.
Oh, yeah. I tease him about that a lot. If you go out to eat with him, he'll eat his plate, and if you got anything left, he'll eat yours too. So I tell him he's very fortunate; he can eat whatever he wants and stays thin.
Yeah,
I can no longer do that.
I've lost about 25 pounds over the last month, and I basically just had to stop eating to do that. You've been working out too. You're looking pretty good, man.
Yeah, thank you.
That's another thing too. Like, would you have had this time to work out and become maybe a little more healthier individual without?
No. Luckily for me, my oldest son Hunter's really into working out, and Tanner's really into his goal. He was, before the pandemic, he'd put on some weight. They were going to the powerlifting tournament, so he was getting all set for that. And as soon as that was canceled, he wanted to cut weight for football. So he's lost about 20 pounds just through choice eating and working out. So
that's
at least four or five times a week, we're in that weight room at the middle school, and it's hot in there.
Oh, I've heard it's just scorching in there.
So, gotten stronger. Weight's still not coming off, but I have gotten stronger.
That's another thing. If heat or whatever killed the coronavirus like some people wish it did, which it doesn't,
it would be gone.
Every volleyball team in the state would play their games in Altamont.
Yes, it would. Yep.
The whole season would be played in August.
Yep.
And there would be no pandemic.
LCC gymnasium.
Or the LCC gymnasium. Oh, my gosh. It's so hot.
Yes.
Man. And it's worse. It's almost worse for me because when not worse than the athletes or the coaches who are in there actively working out and competing.
Right.
But I have to sit at the top and take photos. And so there's no fans or circulation going on in there.
Very hot.
And I'm there sweating it out. And then I'll step outside the LCC gym, or I'll step outside Harrison gym in the summer, and it's colder.
Cooler outside. Yeah. Yep.
And I'm like, what's the temperature out here right now? 95. Wow, this is just, that's unbearable.
Yeah.
I don't see how
they've done it all these years.
I've always thought, I've told Haley Miller of the LCC volleyball team, she's the head coach over there, play your home games at Parsons High School.
Yes. You would think, definitely.
But apparently she thought about that. But she realized she couldn't because your net, you know, it hangs up and it comes down. College nets aren't allowed to have that.
Oh, okay.
Which I
didn't know that.
I think it's a safety thing because I don't really know why. But for some reason, it's a safety and quality thing. And so a college net has to be, you know, bolted into the ground.
I did not know that.
And so you guys don't have – I don't – do you guys – does your court have the ability to put the nets up? Yeah, so.
It used to, but since we – when they remodeled, they didn't. Yeah, they didn't put those in.
No, no air conditioned photography for Sean Fry.
No,
man.
Nope. You got to be rough out.
That's
roughing
right.
Roughing it out.
You know, we're wrapping up here. Last thing. What else has really been on your mind these last few weeks, few months? Obviously, a lot of it has been your dad. A lot of it has been your family. Over the last week, it's now the future of school. I'm curious as to. Do you feel more energized or more beaten down? Do you feel more motivated or feel more defeated as weeks and months have gone by here?
You know, last week leading into my, you know, the visitation and the funeral for my dad, I was feeling pretty defeated, to be honest. But once that, there was a little closure there and you're moving on, just knowing we start tomorrow, feel very energized right now. Feel very excited. Ready to get to work.
Mm-hmm. Feel like the yes or no? What does your gut tell you? Do we have a football season?
Yes.
Do we have the school open at some point in the fall?
Yes.
I'm holding you accountable.
Okay, that's fine.
Rob Marcus is going to pay if I don't get my fall sports.
They'll be there.
But and last thing too, and this is almost a personal question from me to you. What's your best advice to any son for when their father passes on how to cope and deal with that?
I don't know. Just any chance you get, let your loved ones know what they mean to you.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't take time. Don't take things for granted because, you know, we knew with the cancer diagnosis that wasn't going to be forever, but you're still not ever fully prepared for you know, that time. So just enjoy the time with your family. Appreciate the little things.
Yep. The Chiefs are still Super Bowl champions.
Yes, that's right.
Somebody made a joke at the very beginning of this pandemic when we were still at the point where we're only going to lose sports for like 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
They said somebody must have really sold their soul to the devil to get the Chiefs Super Bowl.
Yes.
And I sat there at the time and said, worth it. I don't know about that anymore.
Yeah, I agree with you. I might give that back right now.
Yeah, I'll give that back.
Yeah.
But,
and I hate to say that because I'm a big Chiefs fan, but
hey,
I'd give it all back if we could get this year back.
looking at how you look now, you're going to be around for most of Patrick Mahomes' contract. How you looked maybe earlier in the year before you lost some of this weight, I thought, man, Patrick Mahomes is going to be a Chiefs quarterback for the rest of your life. Now it's just going to be the next 12 years.
That's a great
thing. Chris Jones is back too.
Yes.
Sounds good.
Awesome.
Rob, I'll let you go. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having
me. You know, you've gotten a lot of people that say, you know, condolences about your father and everything like that. Outside of what we talked about today, I won't bring him up that much because I feel like I'm just going to talk to you about sports and do my job around you and try to be normal around you. I remember talking with Hauk about that when he had when his wife Janelle had cancer. You know, he outright said, you know, I know everybody's coming from a good place, and so I'm going to give them the full, honest answer every time. But it wears me down when everybody and their mother asks me, how's Janelle doing? How's Janelle doing? How's Janelle doing? And I'm sure you felt that. You feel that a little bit, too, with your father's passing. And so, you know, obviously your father left a great legacy here in town. And, you know, that dedication and that belief he had in the community around him, you know, I see that in you and in his grandchildren and Hunter and Tanner and all of your children that I've seen have tremendous success. And, you know, hopefully I embody that with my commitment to my profession as well as best I can. And hopefully that commitment gets us to where we need to be this fall.
I hope so too. Thank you.
But that'll do it for the War Room today. As I've said time and time again, please wear the damn mask. Socially distance, follow your health department guidelines. This virus is back. It never went away. And at this point, we're hurting kids with our actions, and that needs to change. That'll do it for the War Room. Thank you. Stay safe, and God bless.